The New Normal Show is proudly brought to you by the Gauteng Provincial Government. Hashtag Growing Gauteng Together.
Good morning and welcome to Life in the New Normal. My name is Barry Shube. I'm the founder, former director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the NICD, and Professor Emeritus of Virology at Wits University. Today I have a very special guest, Dr. Richard Friedland. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Netcare Group of Hospitals. Richard is really a hero for the unstintingly giving of himself to the Khebri Kadisha. Many of his activities is a hero for enlightening the community through the Board of Deputies, through the Chief Rabbi's Office. And he really is a hero for the broader South African population for his active pursuit of the private public partnership between Netcare Group and the public hospital sector to provide dearly needed hospital services for the country as a whole. May I also just mention that 10 to 11 this morning, please stay tuned in. I'll be giving a brief public health message talking about masks and the importance of masks. And just a reminder, if you want to contact me during the show, we would really love to hear from you, both my guest and myself. The contact number for SMSs is 34519. You can send a telegram message on 061-895-1019, 061-895-1019, or you can email me on onair, one word, O-N-A-I-R, at chaifm.com. Richard, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much, Professor Shube. It's a great honor to be on the show, and thank you for those extremely kind words, a complete over-exaggeration of what we all do.
Well deserved, Richard. Tell us briefly about yourself, very briefly about what Netcare is, what Netcare, its reach in the country.
Thank you, Professor. I think if you don't mind, I'm going to ask us just to pause for a moment and pause to think about the extraordinary sacrifice that our healthcare workers are making across the country in whatever group they are, because it's not about public or private in any sense, and whether they are cleaners and whether they're security guards or porters or caterers or security, you know, or our nurses or paramedics or doctors, they're performing an extraordinary role at the moment at a time of great danger and putting their lives at risk to keep us safe. And I was saying to someone last night, Professor, that you know, we need not have to look on Netflix or Showmax for modern-day heroes. They're in the corridors, in the consulting rooms, in the emergency departments, in the wards and critical care units and theatres of all of our hospitals and facilities across the country. And so I think before I start, I just want to pay tribute to them, the enormous sacrifice they're making and will be making over the coming weeks. In terms of Netcare, we are a very large healthcare organization, some 54 hospitals across the country. The majority of our hospitals, of the 11,000 beds we have, are here in the Gauteng. And we have some 29 hospitals between Johannesburg and Pretoria, close on 5,600 beds in the Gauteng. We also have 7 facilities in Cape Town, a number of 12 facilities and hospitals in KwaZulu-Natal, and then are spread out in the various provinces a bit thinner. And then, as you know, Netcare also runs about 72 primary care facilities through Medicross. We run Netcare 911 nationally. We have 70 national renal care sites, and we also provide cancer care at 15 other sites. So all in all, we have a team of about 20,000 people, healthcare workers within Netcare. I think that's enough of a summary.
Yeah, no, indeed. Thank you. I think what's really uppermost in most listeners' minds right now, particularly with the current COVID-19 crisis, and especially with the avalanche of cases which are occurring in Gauteng, tell us about how Netcare is coping. I guess everybody is very interested in that question. Tell us as best you can.
Yes, so I think that, you know, one of the blessings of coming into this pandemic later than some of the European countries and China and the UK was to be able to learn the rich lessons that they had. And obviously we're dealing with something quite extraordinary. But I would say to you that across the country, irrespective of the healthcare group or whether it's public or private, there has been an enormous amount of preparation for what we're going through. And people should feel comforted that all hospitals and facilities are well equipped in South Africa to deal with this pandemic. And, you know, there's been a lot of preparation and learning, and particularly in the way we treat patients. We're getting better at treating patients and getting better outcomes because we're learning from the rest of the world what works and what doesn't work. And maybe I can talk about that a bit later. In terms of Netcare specifically, we are converting more and more of our beds in our hospitals to provide care for COVID patients. In other words, patients suffering from the COVID, COVID-19, and for what we call patients under investigation. And right in the beginning, we set aside about 23% of our beds, and we're now up to close to 70% of our beds in certain areas. We're moving in the Gauteng to that level. And obviously, we're preserving some beds for other essential services. Maternity is an essential service. So is cardiothoracic surgery or neurosurgery or cancer therapy. And so we have a delicate balance between providing and emergency services. So we have this delicate balance of providing enough beds for COVID-19 patients, but also making sure we can provide adequate care. Heaven forbid there is a an emergency requiring emergency treatment, or on a more happier note, a maternity case. And so that's the balance we have. One of the key issues that is important in this pandemic is making sure we've got enough oxygen in our hospitals so that we can provide oxygen therapy to all of our patients. And over the months, we've been building up our stores and increasing our ability to provide that, as well as making sure we have enough drugs and PPE for our staff. And the overriding concern for us is an abundance of caution. Let's make sure it's safe for our patients and also safe for every healthcare worker.
Is non-COVID facilities being compromised by COVID demand? Now, I think you've really, I think you've covered that.
Yes.
And people are reassured. Maybe you could just, clearly the demand, I guess, would be most acute outside the private hospitals and more in the public sector. Tell us about how the private sector is coming to a private-public partnership, I guess, for the population as a whole. Because clearly there must be a tremendous demand.
There is. And, you know, we made it very clear right up front in this pandemic that we stand shoulder to shoulder with our colleagues in the public sector in providing care. This is not a time for – this is a time really to suspend personal interests and personal gain and work together as South Africans in providing care. And in Netcare, we have a rich history of working together with government. During the national strike in 2010, we provided care for more than 872 babies and pregnant women. We did it at Marikana as well, took out 44 injured miners and treated them in our hospitals. And we've done that with all major disasters, so this is no different. And we also said that we would do it at no profit, in other words, at a cost recovery basis. And I'm delighted to say we've reached an agreement with the National Department of Health to treat state patients on that basis throughout our facilities.
Oh, that's great. That's very reassuring. You were talking yesterday, and you were talking a little while back that that the lockdown, you know, gave us the facility to improve, to prepare, to get ready for the surge. Do you feel, because obviously the lockdown, when we were lockdown five and even lockdown four, that came at quite a stiff economic and social cost. Do you think there was an a reasonable enough time to get prepared during the time of the lockdown?
I think there was, Professor, but I think that, you know, the numbers are very significant at the moment that we're seeing on a daily basis. And I do think that facilities will be stretched to cope during this pandemic. but I think everyone has tried their level best. I can tell you from a Netcare perspective, you know, we have over 1,600 adult critical care beds. We've brought in over 150 new ventilators. What we've learned in this pandemic is not every patient needs to be ventilated. In fact, we're finding that there are other forms of oxygen therapy that work just as well, and something known as high-flow nasal cannulation, where a patient doesn't need to be anesthetized to be put on a ventilator. We have 300 in our group, and we've just ordered another 300 in, which will take our numbers to over 600, and other forms of oxygenation. So we're preparing as hard as we can to be able to provide care of the best ability to the broader public in South Africa. But there's no doubt, given the numbers that we're seeing, that capacity is going to be under pressure.
From your vantage point, do you feel that this that the time that we've gained coming on late in the epidemic and also delaying it by the lockdown has also given the kind of medical staff better treatment options? They've kind of learnt a lot more, and maybe that has translated into a better survival, because we are seeing a lower case fatality rate. Or do you think that is maybe artificial?
Absolutely. I think in the beginning of the pandemic, you know, whether it was in China or it was in Italy or Spain or France, patients that had severe respiratory distress were automatically put on ventilators, and we now realize that there are alternative forms of treatment. We now know that corticosteroids work extremely well in patients, and there are other treatment modalities that are working well that have helped us reduce our length of stay. You know, we monitor very carefully within Netcare survival, and most patients mercifully are surviving, but also their lengths of stay. And I think if you look at the early cases in Italy and in China and elsewhere, people were staying on average 18 days in an ICU. And we know in our group that that's closer to 9 to 10 days. And oh, wow. So it says a lot about our healthcare professionals, and it says a lot about our doctors and specialists. But I do think the treatment modalities are improving, and we're understanding what works and what doesn't. I would say that there is a big role for GPs as well to play in keeping people out of hospital. We only want to see the very, very sick in our hospitals, Professor, and we don't want to see the worried well. And I think GPs can play a very significant role in treating people who are mild or moderately ill and keeping them at home in isolation.
Can I ask you a fairly technical question? I guess it is a technical one. In terms of meeting the demand, have things like equipment supply challenges from suppliers, PPE for staff, you mentioned ventilators, other equipment, has there been any kind of bottleneck in getting, because obviously a lot of it does come from overseas, has that been a challenge?
Yes, that's been an enormous challenge. And, you know, whenever there are significant demand, unfortunately the prices rise. But we've been able to procure enough PPE for all of our staff for at least the next three months, and we continue to supplement that. But in the beginning of the pandemic, that was certainly challenging. We have been able to get all of the equipment. It does come at a significantly higher cost given the global demand. But we do believe we're adequately supplied, and you know, we watch that on a daily basis. These are some of the statistics we're watching hourly and on a daily basis. Oxygen supply to our hospitals, we watch on a minute-by-minute basis to ensure that we have enough oxygen flow and that we don't run out in each of our facilities.
Can I turn to another challenge? And that, I guess, is quite a very kind of serious intrinsic one, and that's the human challenge. Has there been burnout? Has there been overt stress, either in the nursing personnel, the medical personnel? Has that been a challenge as well?
It's been an enormous challenge, Professor, and there is a very high level of anxiety, not only in our society, but amongst our healthcare workers, and it's perfectly understandable. They're putting themselves at risk, And clearly we rely on our PPE to protect us, but also on good physical distancing and washing our hands and wearing the appropriate masks. And so there's been a lot of anxiety and also fatigue amongst our healthcare workers. We're providing a lot of counseling through our employer wellness programs to all of our staff. And we've changed our model into a team and task-based approach, where we're having teams of clinical staff and teams of healthcare workers, particularly nurses, working in teams around specific tasks, which has made it a lot better. And, you know, for many doctors in private practice, they often work as individuals, and we're now seeing them coming together and working in teams that allows one team to be on duty for one day and off the next, and give each other breaks. And particularly in the Eastern Cape and Western Cape, where the surge has happened earlier than Gauteng, this team approach has been tremendous in countering the burnout and fatigue that all of our people on the front line are experiencing at the moment.
And is this also knowledge that you also gained from overseas, again having our delay that you could kind of capitalize on what you learned from overseas?
Absolutely. And, you know, we are, as you know, there are nearly 6,000 or 7,000 articles published on COVID. Right. There are a couple of hundred per day, if not 1,000. So we are learning from our colleagues around the world. We're learning from the various clinical trials, and from the lessons, that are being conducted, you know, that have been published literally on a daily basis on how we can do better. And I would say this, the textbook hasn't been written. We're learning. There aren't too many experts out there. And fortunately, this is something that's happened on a global basis. And it's an extraordinary pandemic, Professor, because, you know, as we speak, one in three people in the world are in some form of lockdown. And it just gives you a size and scale of what we're dealing with.
Are the hospitals in, say, in the Gauteng region, in the Gauteng province, I should say, are they more or less equally, shall I say, filled up? Are they more or less, is it equal distribution? Or if one hospital becomes full, can you divert to another hospital? Is there some, you know, program to actually rotate, if one, you know, to kind of even it out amongst the hospitals?
Yes, we watch the occupancies very, very carefully. We have a central command structure here where I'm at the moment, known as a joint operating committee that runs 24 hours a day. And we're able to field calls of where patients arrive and there aren't beds. And for instance, last night, we must have had about 45 admissions just in Johannesburg. And we were able to find beds, maybe not at the exact facility, but at some of our other facilities. And we're able to transport patients to where we have a high care bed or an ICU bed. So absolutely, we do that on a 24-hour basis.
And presumably the emergency service like Hatsola and the other would know where they, you know, where to kind of take patients to. Now, if a particular hospital is full, they would know where to divert to.
Phone through to our Joint Operations Command Center here in at our head office. And as I said, we run that for the entire country. And we're able to provide an insight as to where we have spare capacity and where we can accommodate patients.
Yeah. You know, you and I have been involved with models and modeling and our advice to the various community facilities. Just very briefly, do you feel that these models have been of benefit to you in the planning ahead? I know you and I love to share George Box's saying all models are wrong, but some are useful. But I guess they have been very useful, or they should be useful in planning.
Absolutely. You know, you need a GPS to guide you through this pandemic. And these models are like guiding a GPS to guide us through a storm. They're not absolutely accurate, but we pick up very important trends. And for us in Netcare, we use that to determine what kind of occupancy and what kind of bed capacity we need to make available. And so what we see is that generally speaking, 20% of people that get COVID will require some form of hospitalization or treatment within a week of getting the disease. So it's 7 days from when they acquire it. Unfortunately, about 30% of those people will require some form of critical care. And so it allows us to plan ahead as we see the numbers rising. But importantly, it's an important indicator for our communities across South Africa to understand whether the disease is increasing, the transmission is increasing, or it's actually ameliorating and it's on the decline. And, you know, as we are sitting here in the Gauteng at the moment, unfortunately, we are surging. And the numbers, as you saw last night, nearly 5,000 new cases in the Gauteng and over 10,000 cases in South Africa. We are surging in the Gauteng, and we all need to take extreme caution at the moment in terms of our own personal behavior to ensure we don't contract this virus or inadvertently spread it.
Rishi, we'll take a short ad break and come back in a minute or two.
The New Normal Show is proudly brought to you by the Gauteng Provincial Government. Hashtag growing Gauteng together.
Richard, I guess a fairly kind of technical question, which I suppose a number of people will be interested in. From a public health point of view, are visitors allowed into the hospital? Can they visit patients? Can they go to the non-COVID part of the hospital? Have there been any protocols put in place with regard to visitors coming to the hospital?
Yes, thank you for asking that, Professor, because I think it's so important that in a pandemic that can easily dehumanize us, that we retain our sense of humanity. So we are allowing visiting on an exceptional basis, certainly for maternity and pediatrics. But in terms of COVID patients, if there are tragically those patients that are at the end of their lives, we do allow a family member to come into the unit and be able to pay their last respects. And we have found that that gives a great sense of comfort. Obviously, we ensure that they are fully donned in extensive PPE so that they don't put themselves or anyone else at risk, and we help them with that. But it does allow closure, and it retains a sense of humanity in what can otherwise be a ghastly experience of not really being able to say farewell and have closure when either a loved one or a relative or is passing. So we do allow it under exceptional circumstances. And obviously for birthing, we do allow a partner to be present or a husband or spouse to be present. And obviously in pediatrics, it's very important that mothers are with their children.
And for the non-terminally ill COVID patients, either in ICU or not in ICU?
No, we simply can't allow that to happen, Professor. We have a very strict visitation policy. And the reason we do is the extreme risk of transmissibility of this or transmission of this virus. And so we have stopped all visitation to our hospitals a while back. And, you know, we don't allow anyone unnecessarily access in case they might transmit the virus, even inadvertently. And I want to make a point here. You know, there's a great stigmatization out there around people who've contracted COVID. And I think we need to all look at ourselves in the mirror, because I can tell you that we know of so many people that have taken every precaution under the sun and have still contracted the virus. And so often we must not apportion blame or stigma to people who are positive, because we do know of many people who, despite all the precautions they're taking, have still contracted it. I think what's incumbent on us is to make sure we're not the weakest link in this chain, and that we all maintain the precautions. And you're going to be speaking about masks. And critically, wearing a mask is absolutely essential, and obviously washing our hands and physical distancing.
Yeah, sure. Do you think actually in the post-COVID era, when all this is over, well, hopefully it is going to be over as soon as possible, but when we have a vaccine, when COVID does come under control sometime next year, do you think that COVID has kind of taught us lessons which we didn't know before? that our hospital practices now, in fact, will change, you know, in terms of public health, in terms of hygienic practices going forward.
Absolutely, Professor. I think that I think this has been a wake-up for the way we treat patients and our risk-based approach from an occupational health and safety point of view in our hospitals and in all of our healthcare facilities, but dare I say within businesses and shops and, you know, organizations. We all need to take hand hygiene a lot more seriously, and I don't think that we ever get rid of COVID until there's a vaccine. It may well be that there are other viruses out there, and I think COVID has taught us some extremely important lessons.
Yeah, indeed. It's going to be interesting to see how we do go forward because, you know, wearing masks has always been a cultural thing in the Far East, and maybe it might kind of imprint itself in our population going forward now.
I think so, and I think that if I can issue just one word of caution, and we're seeing, you know, the disease plateauing in the Western Cape at the moment, and we will get to that phase in the Gauteng, and we will see eventually the pandemic beginning to ameliorate and to lessen. But as it does that, we mustn't lessen our guard, and I think that's the lesson we're learning. We've seen it now in Melbourne in Australia, where they've reintroduced lockdown. We're seeing it in other areas of the United States. We saw it in Iran. And so we need to maintain this absolute level of hypervigilance. There's no need to panic. But at the same time, we mustn't be blasé or lackadaisical. And so all of these precautions are absolutely critical, even as we begin to recover one day or in the coming weeks from this pandemic.
Yeah, I know, sure. Richard, we have a few minutes. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes. Would you like to kind of give a wrap up and maybe, you know, you're really kind of at the kind of coalface, you know, at the hospital section is really where you are seeing the kind of brunt of this pandemic. And I guess maybe particularly, as you know, even in the midst of this terrible health crisis which we are in now, there are still members of our community who are blissfully unaware of the formidable threat of the disease. And they read that they're carrying on activities as if there were no virus menace. Do you have a closing message? I think to the one section of the population which is very anxious, to the other section of the community which is blasé.
Yes, thank you very much, Professor. I would say that what we don't need to do is worry and panic. What we do need to do is to maintain all the precautions we can. And if you've done that, you've done your best. And we all know what those precautions are. But this pandemic has taught us one thing, something known as co-responsibility. We are co-responsible with others for our behavior. You know, you can have 100 people, Professor, and 99 of those 100 are diligently following physical distancing, washing their hands, and wearing masks. And it takes one individual to break that chain. And so my message always is that we're as strong as the weakest link. Let's make sure we're the strongest link in that chain, and we prevent the transmission. Because it's not about ourselves. It's about ourselves potentially infecting others in our various communities. And that's the, I think, what COVID-19 is coming to teach the world, is we have a responsibility not just to ourselves, but to our fellow human beings and communities. And so I think we've got to remember that we're stronger together, and we all need to look after each other, our families, and ourselves, and we will get through this pandemic and be able to meet on the other side.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Dr. Richard Friedlander, this has really been a most fascinating, a most informative look at the complexities governing the hospital environment. Really, it must be a most intensely challenging job for you. May you go from strength to strength and looking after us also admirably. Thank you for giving up of your precious time to enlighten us. It has been really great having you. Thank you so much for being the guest. Listeners, please stay tuned after the ad break, for I'll be giving an important public health message and talking about masks. Thank you.
The New Normal Show is proudly brought to you by the Gauteng Provincial Government. #GrowingGauteng together.
Welcome back at Barry Shube. This is Life in the New Normal. I really want to take a few minutes now just to talk about a particularly important preventive measure in the COVID pandemic, and that's the issue of masks. What's really becoming abundantly clear as we learn more and more about this pandemic, and remember, we are still in a learning curve, and it's still a young pandemic, but we have a lot of information, 6,000, 7,000, in fact, some even say 8,000 publications have flooded the scientific literature. And from this, we know that really there are two important things that I really want to bring out. One of them is that it is abundantly clear that the major route of transmission of this virus is airborne transmission. And physical distancing, hand washing, cleaning of surfaces are all extremely important preventive measures, and we dare not kind of be lax on those. But probably the single most important preventive measure is face covering with a mask. This has been shown in a number of scientific, intensively studied investigations. But it's very important that the mask is worn correctly, and I want to go through a couple of important aspects with regard to mask wearing. First of all, a mask must be comfortable. It must fit snugly above the nose, below the chin, and around the cheeks. And it must not be too tight. I think this is quite a common mistake. People kind of tie it too tight, so it becomes uncomfortable. And when it becomes uncomfortable, people tend to keep adjusting it, and that's what we want to try and avoid. It must be a comfortable, snug fit, covering the nose, the mouth, and the chin, and around the cheeks. Secondly, it should be a cloth barrier. And it should be a light material, preferably pleated, so it does then kind of expand to fit under the chin. And it should have a triple layer. Now, it mustn't be a thick material, so thick that you can hardly breathe. It must be a light material, triple layer preferably. And to see if it is an adequate barrier, you can do what we call the blow test. If you have your hand about 6 inches away from the mask, if you blow and you don't feel the air, then it is adequate protection. It's an adequate barrier. Then thirdly, importantly, one should wash your hands before putting on the mask, because remember, when you're putting on the mask, you're actually coming to close contact with where the virus gets into the body. It gets into the body through the eyes, through the nose, into the mouth. And when you're putting on your mask, you don't just start touching those areas where your hands have not been cleaned. So you've got to clean your hands thoroughly before you put the mask on. Put the mask on, see that it fits correctly. And then when removing the mask, again, wash your hands, because you may well be touching parts of the mask which may have picked up infectious airborne droplets. And then while wearing the mask, it's very important to avoid touching, fiddling with a mask, because again, you're coming into contact with your vulnerable area where the virus gets into the body. Sometimes the nose gets itchy. Try not to do it to touch with your hands, particularly not to touch the front of the mask. If you do have to, then use your elbow or your forearm, but not your hands. Your hands are the vehicles which then convey infection. And then fifthly, when you remove the mask, have it adequately laundered. It could be good to put it out in the sun, because sunlight rapidly inactivates the virus. I'm often be asked, is there a harm in wearing a mask for prolonged periods of time? No, certainly not if it's a comfortable wearing mask, a comfortable fitting mask. We know, for example, that surgeons in theater wear a surgical mask, and they'll operate for 5, 6, 8, sometimes even 9 hours. So really, it is very important to wear a mask comfortably, avoid fiddling with the mask, avoid touching the mask, particularly the front of the mask, which may well be contaminated from droplets. And then I've also been asked about face shields, those Perspex face shields. Now, a face shield is effective, probably second best to a mask. It is used in certain circumstances, for example, teachers who will find great difficulty teaching or talking through a mask. But then, of course, if one does wear a face shield, then it's very important to keep that social distance of at least 2 meters, more than 6 feet, a bit more than 6 feet. maybe 2, maybe even up to 3 meters, because the face shield is not quite as effective. Again, the face shield must be worn correctly. It must cover from behind the ears, below the chin. Mustn't be sticking out 90 degrees. It must cover the face completely. Face shield is also used, for example, shop assistants. You have to have a mask for a whole day. It's much more convenient having a face shield. The ideal, of course, is to have both. And in a high-risk situation, we do recommend having both a mask as well as a face shield. Face shield obviously has the advantage it's easier to clean, and particularly if somebody needs to have their face covered for a whole day, it may again be a lot more convenient. The face shields, in fact, were originally designed to protect the eyes as eye protection. In other words, together with a mask. And as a substitute for goggles. So please stay safe, wear your mask at all times, when you're outside your house, and wear it properly, with all those, hints, all those, advice which I gave you just now. So before I sign off, let me again thank the studio technical team, Craig Guthrie and DJ Flo. Thank you to the listeners, and please stay safe. And stay well, and have a very good day and a good week and a good month. All the best. Bye.
The New Normal Show was proudly brought to you by the Gauteng Provincial Government. #GrowingGautengTogether.